This is Asia in Focus from Control Risks, the global specialist risk consultancy. Each episode of Asia in Focus brings you in-depth analysis and perspective from our experts in Asia Pacific on the issues that matter most to businesses.
Hi, everyone. This is Angela Mancini, partner at Control Risks, and I lead the Asia Pacific Markets Group. As we've all been hearing, we are indeed in the year of the election, with over 65 countries holding elections in 2024, and with over half the world's adult population voting. And of all of the elections, India, which is expected to hold its federal election between April and May of this year, is by far the biggest. With over 900 million eligible voters, it's like taking the voting populations of the US, Brazil, Nigeria, and Indonesia, and then just being about halfway there. And we're in one of the highest geopolitical risk years in recent memory. So India is, luckily for it, in a, quote, geopolitical sweet spot. It's a rising power on the global stage, and it's seen as a critical ally by a number of Western states. Yet India is still driving its own agenda quite firmly, and we see that most notably in its relationship with Russia. So India's election is significant. And while the outcome may not be as up in the air, say, as the U.S., the what to expect next, so to speak, is really significant, especially to the many businesses who have been operating there for many years, but who are also expanding there now as the country's booming and as many companies are de-risking from China. So it is no surprise that here at Control Risks, we have a lot of our clients asking about the elections in India and what it means. And while we don't expect a massive surprise with the outcome, it is not an easy market. It's improved, but it's still quite challenging for clients in all sectors. So it's really important to understand what's going on and what we can expect to see.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi is coming back to power, perhaps with a bigger majority. What that means is that businesses will enjoy political stability, policy continuity at the federal level. But at the same time, businesses have to be watchful of the risks. There is a potential for erratic decision making, as we have seen in the past 10 years. And the allegations of crony capitalism are getting sharper and louder. And that's something to really watch out for.
So to help us unpack all of that today, we are turning to one of our lead South Asia experts, Khalid Shah. Let's turn to you. You've been covering the India market now for almost 10 years. What is likely to be the outcome of the election? And more importantly, why is this important to our clients at this point?
Hi, Angela. Thank you for having me on the podcast. To begin with, I would like to say that this is the most exciting and perhaps the most momentous elections in India's history. The opposition is in doldrums. Prime Minister Narendra Modi remains very popular. He is arguably the only political leader with a pan-national base and also party support to be able to win the elections. So what we are predicting and what a lot of opinion polls are also showing is that Prime Minister Narendra Modi is likely to come back to power. This will, of course, ensure political stability, policy continuity in the coming 5 years. But what's more important is that the ruling party, which is the Bharatiya Janata Party, is expecting to win a bigger majority. Even after being 10 years in power, they expect to better their performance from the 2019 elections, which in itself will determine what the policy agenda and the policy outlook of the next government is going to be. If, as the Bharatiya Janata Party and Prime Minister Narendra Modi claims, that their coalition will win 400 parliamentary seats, that will be quite remarkable in terms of the electoral performance, but also the power that Prime Minister Narendra Modi will have in his third tenure. And the scale of victory will also determine the appetite and willingness for pursuing business-friendly reforms, as well as the policy agenda of Modi administration in the third term. What we are really expecting is that there will be greater centralization of power at the federal level. In the last two tenures of Modi government, we've already seen that much of the power resides in the hands of one or two people, most notably the Prime Minister Narendra Modi. And much of the cabinet really follows the lead of Prime Minister Modi and his policy agenda. There are a few technocratic cabinet ministers who are likely to come back to power or who are likely to be inducted in the federal cabinet. But we have to understand that the whole story, so to say, or the whole political narrative of the party and country revolves around what Prime Minister Narendra Modi says, what he does, and what's on his agenda. So all in a sense that he is an all-powerful Prime Minister, the only parallel that we can draw is perhaps to India's first Prime Minister, Jawaharlal Nehru, and that's quite remarkable. While we are at it, we're talking about centralization of power at the federal level. The federal dynamics are changing. The provincial state governments are pushing back increasingly to Modi's agenda, particularly those that are not ruled by Bharatiya Janata Party. They also want a share in the pie of power and also want to bask in a way in the glory of having implemented changes for their own populace. That's something that's creating a sense of rift between the regional parties and Prime Minister Narendra Modi. More importantly, what we're also seeing is that there is a huge ideological and policy divergence between the regional parties and Prime Minister Narendra Modi's party, which in turn is not necessarily good for businesses, because if there is a policy divergence, businesses will have to navigate through these dynamics going ahead. What's more important for, you know, Prime Minister Narendra Modi's third tenure is that India is in a, as you said earlier, that India is in a geopolitical sweet spot. India is reaping benefits of being able to assert itself at the global arena, while at the same time not choosing sides or not being part of any formal alliance. And more importantly, with India presenting itself as an alternative to China and really showcasing to the world that it is the next big investment destination, the third tenure of Prime Minister Modi is likely to be exciting. It's something to watch out for, and perhaps a lot of takeaways for businesses and our clients as well.
Okay, so if we think that Modi's going to win, what can we say as we look back at the last 10 years and look forward into the next five? Are there any lessons we can draw from that? What might it look like in terms of business climate? And I'll mention that one key area our clients ask us a lot about is the level playing field. So meaning, you know, depending on the sector, it might be different, but in general, clients feel quite concerned that they don't quite have that level playing field that they might have in other markets. Might that look to change, improve, or get worse?
So what we need to start with is that Prime Minister Narendra Modi is arguably the most business-friendly Prime Minister in the history of India. He has pursued business-friendly reforms with a certain sense of boldness and decisiveness. And that has paid its rewards. And we see high inflows of foreign direct investments, companies coming in eagerly or seeing India as an option of their investments. You know, what the next 5 years of Modi are going to look like can very well be judged from a recent cabinet decision taken by Prime Minister Narendra Modi. The government liberalized the space sector for foreign investments, allowing foreign direct investments in the space sector, which was earlier a government monopoly, where the government was mainly active in the promotion of space industry in India. This really gives us a sense of the drift of the policy agenda of Prime Minister Narendra Modi in next 5 years, which means that there will be more business-friendly reforms. The business environment will be easy for foreign businesses to come and do business in India. But more importantly, we have to also add in a bit of nuance here. Over the last 10 years, Prime Minister Narendra Modi has shown that winning elections remains a bigger priority than perhaps legislative reforms, so on and so forth. For instance, the government introduced new labor codes, which were seen as very important by the industry for promoting manufacturing in India. These labor codes were passed in the parliament. They were ratified by the state governments, but the government has remained reluctant in implementing them, fearing electoral pushback. Similarly, land acquisition norms were changed very early in the Modi's tenure, but there were some reverses on that front as well. So in the next 5 years, what we're really going to see is there will be, in a sense, a mixed bag for the businesses in India. There will be impetus for domestic manufacturing, but at the same time, government has shown protectionist tendencies to ensure domestic manufacturing kicks off. Recent regulatory changes suggest that tech and tech-related industries could face regulatory hassles. And more broadly, the way the government is implementing its regulatory reforms, regulatory changes, is that there is not much consultation, perhaps with industry stakeholders, with the opposition or civil society on how to regulate the upcoming emerging industries. For instance, the government imposed the license requirement last year on import of IT hardware into India. This was ostensibly done to promote domestic manufacturing of IT hardware and also to cut imports from China. But, you know, the decision was so sudden that suddenly the companies had to reckon with the return of license system. They had to seek permits within 3 months. There was a huge uproar from the industry, pushback from US-based companies, also pushback from the United States government, and the government had to repeal that decision on having import licenses for IT hardware. This, in a way, shows that the government may not think its decisions through and is prone to erratic decision making. And also, at the same time, there is an important need to balance out business-friendly reforms with what is suitable for the electorate. The electorate, for instance, the farmers want their interests protected. So there are issues and there are concerns and there are limitations to policy making. So in the next few years, what we will see broadly is a push towards manufacturing. We will see potentially tax reforms and with a recurring dose of erratic decision making. And responding to your question about, you know, level playing field, there is the sense that a few conglomerates in India are getting increased attention and facilitation by the government. And that is leading to allegations of crony capitalism. And that sense that the local champions are important is also feeding into the larger nationalist narrative that we need these local champions for nation building. And so in a sense, they also become untouchable, or they become too big to be messed with. So that will remain a concern for foreign investors coming into India in the coming years.
So what I hear you saying is, assuming Modi wins, it'll be a continuation of a strong pro-business perspective, but maybe patchy in terms of either the substance and or the process of pushing through reforms, and of course the crony capitalism point which you raise, which is one that comes up a lot with our clients as well. So moving on from that, then, apart from the regulatory risks, the clients that we have are exposed to a lot of localized risks, and navigating those challenges at the local level is really troublesome. Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like for clients, you know, at the more local level, trying to just actually get things done as it relates to land, bureaucracy, some of those other day-to-day challenges? How is that looking for clients, and what are some practical suggestions we might have to tackle that?
Firstly, an investor or a business seeking to enter the India market has to understand that India is a union of states, which means that state governments have significant powers constitutionally, and a lot of regulation on business is in the hands of state government. For instance, land acquisition, issues concerning labor, issues concerning supply of utilities, supply of power, etc. All of this comes under the domain of a state government. Law and order is in the domain of state government. So the daily interactions with state governments are very high of a business. And not all state governments are ruled by the Bharatiya Janata Party, of the party of Prime Minister Narendra Modi. So there is a potential that policies of the federal government and the state government do not align, and the interests of a state government and the federal government do not align. After all, state governments also have their favorite companies, and they want those companies to be benefited. So that's one challenge that our clients do generally face: how to navigate this dynamic from a federal level to a state level to a more localized level of governance. Then the second issue is that corruption at lower levels, particularly in the state governments, remains a huge concern. At the top level, at the federal level, high corruption has kind of, we don't hear the kind of allegations we heard 10 years ago when it comes to corruption. But at the state level, our own experience with businesses and also our own work that we do with businesses, we do very often come across that corruption remains a concern. The other thing is for big projects, land acquisition remains a challenge. I want to take an example of Modi's favorite project, which was bullet train built with investment and assistance from Japan. For 5 years, the project remained in a limbo because the state government caused roadblocks to land acquisition. Now, this is a project that Prime Minister has invested in. He wants this project to kick off because it kind of shows him as a man trying to bring cutting-edge technology to India, so on and so forth. But the state government refuses or causes roadblocks, or the local players cause roadblocks to a project that the Prime Minister really wants to get done on expedited timelines. So the project faced multiple delays. That tells you how important it is to deal with local players and deal with local companies. The other thing is that the businesses very often face risks that they may not have calculated or foreseen. For instance, if you're setting up a big project and you require land for it, the local communities are up in the arms against you. Or a local player who happens to be politically linked will not let you work in his area if you do not onboard him as a vendor. We had this challenge very recently with a solar company. They had acquired land. They wanted to start constructing, go to the construction phase of the project. But a local political leader insists that all contracts concerning construction have to go to him. And there is no way that company can perhaps do work in that area by sidelining that local influencer. So it's very important for businesses to understand the local dynamics of where they're going, what government is in power in that particular state, what are the government's priorities, what's the regulatory outlook of that state. Most importantly, it's important to do an assessment of key risks that the business may face in the life cycle of that project. So it's very important to understand that while at the federal level, there is a business-friendly environment, at the state level and the local level, that may not necessarily be the case. And navigating that federal to local dynamic is what's very critical for the businesses and perhaps the most challenging. So what we recommend to our clients is to always carry out risk assessments for projects, understand the risks well in advance so that they have mitigation strategies in place in dealing with such challenges.
We'll return to the conversation with Khalid in a minute. Please click on the link in our podcast notes to follow our Asia in Focus podcast series, where we'll be bringing regular updates from all across the region. And if you're looking for more of our India analysis, please do visit our website, www.controlrisk.com. As we look at international news headlines, there's a lot of focus, I guess, switching to a different risk, on this concern of some perception of backsliding with India as a democracy, right? Can you put that into context for us a bit? What should businesses keep in mind when it comes to social tensions and India's internal politics, and more importantly, identity politics?
I think it's an important question because there is a lot of attention in the international media on social tensions in India, perhaps at times magnified. And that in a way also is an important part of the narrative on India or the India story. What we have seen in the last few years is that India's internal security has significantly improved, particularly when it comes to risks concerning militancy or terrorism. We haven't seen any major terrorist attack outside conflict zones of Jammu and Kashmir and Northeast. So that's a plus point. But more importantly is that there have been a spate of protests and demonstrations, anti-government demonstrations, as well as communal tensions between communities, which have dominated the headlines. But so far, civil unrest and social tensions have not directly affected businesses. But that may not be the case in future. It's important for businesses to keep in mind whether social tensions in India will get worse. If they get worse, how their businesses will be impacted. Then talking about the identity politics, it's very important to consider identity politics. You know, state governments have often taken measures to attract voters of a particular community to their party, and had very little regard for the impact of those policies. For instance, recently the Karnataka government, Karnataka is, by the way, the top destination of foreign direct investments in India, considered as the IT hub of India. A lot of foreign direct investments that come to India go to the Karnataka. The Karnataka state government recently hinted that they're implementing a policy that they want the multinational corporations to display the list or the number of Kannada speaking employees on their notice boards. I mean, this seems like not a big issue on the face of it, but this doesn't seem like a big issue. But the backdrop to this is that the government is in a way trying to create a rift between the local Kannada population and the immigrants who may be coming to Karnataka to work for IT companies, so on and so forth. And the government really threatened to cancel the licenses of businesses who do not comply with this policy of disclosing how many local employees you have in your company. Now, this policy comes from, you know, deep social tensions between various groups in the state, but has an implication for businesses because now they have to comply with a diktat of the state government or potentially have their licenses cancelled. Another example is during the COVID or in the aftermath of COVID, governments started reserving private sector jobs for local communities. Although these laws were turned down by the Supreme Court of India, but this also gives you a sense of the level of policy making that happens at the state level. So to consider India's social tensions and where people are coming from is very important. And most importantly, in a population where youth unemployment remains high, the demand for jobs is increasing, but there are not enough jobs to provide for the youth. The government is not hiring as many people as it used to. So the expectations from the private sector are also growing. And that too at a time when cost of living is increasing. So these social tensions will have an impact on the business environment in future. And more importantly, which is broadly the identity politics, also poses reputational risks for businesses. We have seen this with the case of social media platforms. We've seen this with OTT platforms, where this tense, polarized political discourse leads to often boycott campaigns, smear campaigns, misinformation campaigns against companies from one end of the political spectrum or the other. So businesses really do have to also keep in mind the social environment they're working in. And perhaps they have to tiptoe around in a way that they do not offend one community or the other.
So last question for you, crony capitalism. You mentioned that earlier, but I wanted to press you a little bit further on that because that's another area that comes up a lot when our clients are talking to us about the risks of doing business and expanding in India. And there's corruption involved there, and there's a host of other business risks. But can you give us just a very brief view on how you think crony capitalism might impact the business environment moving forward now, say 10 years down the line? Is that something people should be worried about, or we think that's something that is on the wane?
So to begin with, I mean, the opposition is really going hard on the crony capitalism allegation to corner Prime Minister Narendra Modi. And opinion polls show that there may be some buy-in from the local population or the voters on this issue. A recent poll showed that the 52% of the population believes that government policies are benefiting big businesses. And only 9% said that it's And only 9% said the government policies are benefiting farmers, which is a stark difference in what the people think about government policies. So this issue is likely to remain around, One, because the opposition wants to corner Prime Minister Modi. Two, Prime Minister Modi also remains a little insecure in dealing with this issue head on. They have tried to bypass the issue by not talking about it instead of taking it head on. And perhaps the backdrop of this is that local champions do have an edge in some sectors, particularly highly regulated industries. And as these allegations of crony capitalism come forward, investors have to be important to consider who their local partners are and what their political exposure is. If you have to do business in India in long term, you have to also consider that at some point there may be a new ruling dispensation that may come to power. And a recent fiasco with one of the leading domestic conglomerates of India also shows how investors could face potential reputational risks, could also face political risks arising from these allegations of crony capitalism. But more broadly, talking about the business environment in India, there has been a generational shift in India's thinking from a socialist state to an investment destination. Today, we're living in an era where a state government ruled by Communist Party of India is holding summits to attract foreign investors. That really tells you that all major political parties of India believe that businesses are important. But how keen are they to facilitate businesses? How keen are they to create a facilitating environment for the businesses will really varies from party to party and state to state. So when it comes to the issue of crony capitalism, it's something to reckon with. Some industries, some sectors are monopolized. They are monopolies or duopolies. And the government policies of last few years have ensured or enabled those monopolies. And for a foreign investor coming in India, these are issues to consider before making investments in India. The other thing which is really important to say is that while we are talking about a business-friendly environment, there is also the welfare state which refuses to go away. India, at the end of the day, has a huge poverty challenge. There is a lot of inequality. There is a lack of development. So the federal and the state governments do have to intervene and take welfare measures to ensure that the population is getting benefits from the government and able to move out of poverty. So there is, in a sense, a dichotomy in India's business environment, so to say.
Very, very last question for you, which is this. Everything we read in the press tells us this is India's moment, and we've been reading that for a while. Having said that, what's the one thing that you would say to businesses in terms of, key takeaway, things to keep in mind as it relates to business risk in India?
I think an important takeaway is that India is likely to remain among the fastest growing economies of the world. If you look at India 30 years back, there was another country with similar per capita income, similar population, and the kind of expansion we saw in that country really tells us the direction of India's growth story. So India will remain an opportunity for growth and expansion and so on and so forth for businesses. There's no doubt about that. And also a big market for foreign goods and services and for foreign companies. But it's important to understand that while we look at the shiny side of India's story, India remains a difficult place to do business. And to be able to do business in a difficult environment, businesses also have to be aware of local dynamics. They have to be informed and make informed decisions and choices while entering the India market. So all in all, yes, there is a narrative, there is a story that India is the next destination for foreign investment, for business. But there is a nuance which is important for businesses to consider.
Great. Well, let's leave it there. Thank you so much, Khalid, for the discussion. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. That's all for today's episode of Asia in Focus. If you enjoyed this episode, please do subscribe to our podcast channel so you receive all new episodes just as soon as they're released.
If you enjoyed what you heard on this episode of Asia in Focus, be sure to subscribe. And make sure to check out our other podcasts as well. All of our podcasts are available wherever you listen. Just search Control Risks. You can follow all of our analysis and find out how we're helping businesses build organizations that are secure, compliant, and resilient by visiting controlrisks.com.